Moving along, our next speaker today is David G. Originally from NYC, lives in Los Angeles, and a new member of the LA Intergroup Board. David will share this morning on the transformation of the last 10 and a half years, and he will be speaking on step 9. Welcome, David.
Hi there. Thank you. I'm David. I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you, Brandy and Diane and Susan, for getting me out here. And Lewis, that was so amazing. Thank you so much. I always heard if you're stuck on a step, you have to go back to the step before. And you just really teed it up with your honesty and breaking it down about the principle of willingness and the idea that faith without works is dead. And, you know, step 9 for me, I'm going to talk a little bit about what it was like, because, you know, when I came into OA 13 years ago, as Brandy said, next month, God willing, I'll have 11 years of abstinence, which is no binging, no purging, and no flour, no sugar. But when I came into New York City, I remember seeing the banners with the steps, and I would look up to step 9 and I was like, I'm out of here. There's no way. And I haven't even hurt anybody. Everybody's hurt me. So why do I have to get to step 9? But what it was like for me, you know, I grew up in New York, in a very perfect looking town, perfect looking everything on Long Island. My dad's a prominent doctor. My mom's an early childhood trauma psychologist, perfect parents on the outside. I went to summer camps and private schools, and on the inside, it was just completely different. Both my parents have been in and out of these rooms and have all the isms and mental illness. And my dad was severely abusive. Even though he was a doctor, he was a rageaholic, alcoholic. And I remember just growing up in complete fear and terror all the time for those first couple of years of life. And, you know, I always share, when I have a long time to tell my story, the first memory that I have of childhood, my dad came home from work and he was just upset about something and he was raging through the house. And I have an older sister who always like would provoke him a little. And I was kind of the shrink to nothing Al-Anon. And my dad was raging at my sister and he ended up like throwing her against the wall and grabbing her chins, calling her a fat effing pig. And I like came to the rescue and I jumped on my dad's back. I was probably 5 years old and he grabbed me by the shirt and like threw me up against the wall and he was just out of his mind and he was sweating and he was raging and I was screaming. And I remember looking across this long hallway that we had and my mom was standing in the doorway of her bedroom and I'm just like begging for her to help us and please like protect us. And she went into her room and closed the door. And I remember at that moment, like something snapped in me that was just like, it's every man for themselves here. It's fight or flight. I got to do it all on my own. And my own parents aren't even there to protect me. And I remember just going to school and I got bullied and, you know, people called me mute boy because I didn't speak up in the classroom. And I would always walk around with my head down and, you know, just the real upbringing of somebody who grew up in alcoholism and abuse. Like, you know, I didn't know how to talk to people. I was scared of everybody, head down all the time. And when I was 7, my dad was raging again. And I remember I locked myself into my mom's bedroom and I said, we have to go. And she said, I know. And I said, we have to go tonight. You know, 7-year-old making these big decisions for the whole family. And we packed up at 3 a.m. and we escaped the house and we moved across Long Island. And I ended up testifying against my dad and court took away custody. And then I said, off with your head. And I didn't talk to him for 15 years. And that was kind of the beginning of my OA story, because although my dad was physically removed from my life, he started taking up a lot of space in my mind. And I was scared all the time that he was going to come to my house and like kidnap me and my sister and take us to Fort Lauderdale in Florida and bury us in a swamp or something. And I would eat over it and I would eat and I would eat and I would eat over the fear. I would eat over the future tripping. And soon I became 60 to 70 pounds overweight. And then I started getting bullied more at school. And, you know, from about the age 7 through 16, I was the fat kid in school. I got picked on. You know, every day was just like all the bullies. And I would come home and I would eat over the shame that people were making fun of me. And then I found bulimia, and I went to the whole other side of this disease through the rest of high school and through college. And by the time I hit my bottom, I was a senior in college, and I hadn't spoken to my dad in 15 years. I had no money in my bank account. I was failing out of college, and I was living in Manhattan. And I was now full-time binging and purging, and 15 diet pills a day. And I was going from every Whole Foods in New York City, just doing the tour every day, binging, 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 10,000 calorie binges, you know, every stop. And then I would go down to my gym, my 24-hour gym in Soho, and I would count, you know, the calories on my phone, and I wouldn't leave the gym until the calories that I binged that day matched the calories that I burned on the treadmill. And that was my life for years, just this cycle of binging and purging and starving and diet pills and what are they thinking of me? And I hate my effing dad. And when am I going to find the love of my life? Like, I just, my life was just completely unmanageable. And so I came into OA 13 years ago. And this, you know, I ended up by the grace of God moving to LA, where I, you know, 11 years ago, next month, I got abstinent and I started working with a sponsor. And as we went through the steps, you know, really step 9 for me begins with step 4. And it was step 4 where I started to see my part in things and I got to look at my patterns. And the first time through the steps, it was, you know, it was the very surface OA amends that I got to look at. You know, for example, I had a roommate in college who his grandma left him a chunk of fudge before she died. And like every college, you know, overeater, I stole all my roommate's fudge. And he came back one night and I had to like admit to him that I stole it. And he like told me this whole story about his grandma who died. And I just like, I think I just left the college. And I moved to New York. And those were the types of things I did as an overeater. You know, I stole from Whole Foods because I didn't have money to pay for my binges. Those very surface type of OA, just cleaning up that side of the street. And I remember with my first sponsor, we got to my parents, and my sponsor said, "Don't even think about it. Like, just get through this round of the steps. There will always be the next round." And I love the questions during Lewis's Q&A because they're just so helpful that I don't have to make all my amends in a day. And sometimes I'm not ready. And you know, I used to have a sponsor who used to say, "Who's making the amends? Is it self, you know, running the show, or is it David with a higher power?" And you know, there have been times I think I've been through the steps 5 or 6 or 7 times, and there have been times where I've made amends or I've wanted to make amends to ex-girlfriends, and then my sponsor was like, "Who wants to make the amends? Is it you wanting to show your ex-girlfriend how far you've come, or is it a more humble you who just wants to make things better?" And you know, I really, that's why it's so helpful to have a sponsor who really gets in there with me. I have a sponsee right now who's on his 9th step, and we meet every week and we just go through one amend and we break it down and we talk it through and we figure out what the amend is going to be and how is he going to do it and what does direct mean in 2021. And it's not just like he comes in with his homework and he has to check it off. And that's how I used to roll when I came into OA. I just want to get to the next step. I want to get an A on my step work assignment. And the idea of the steps for me is to build a new character. And I can't do that overnight. And sometimes these things take time. And sometimes I'm not ready. And a couple years later, after the first time through the steps, I went through the steps again. And I got to my step 4 and I got to see my part and I got to see my pattern. And this time around on the steps, I saw a pattern, which was any time that somebody hurt me, whether it was big or small, whether it was an email or a physical punch, whenever somebody hurt me, I never allowed forgiveness ever. It was off with your head, out of my kingdom. I'm never talking to you again. You're iced. Don't even try to apologize because you're out. And that was my pattern. And that's how I rolled with every, you know, ex-girlfriend I had or friendships that just like poofed overnight. I was just a cut and run type of person. You know, it says in the AA, you know, it says in the big book, we have the total inability to form true partnerships or maintain true partnerships, because I don't know how to just let people live and let live. I don't know how to let people back in my life. I don't know how to get vulnerable. You know, this is me without recovery. I don't know how to be vulnerable enough to listen to somebody's apology and then forgive them. It's easier for me to just say, you're out. Goodbye. I'll see you next life. And I saw that pattern in step 4 and 5. And when I got to step 9 again, I started making amends to ex-girlfriends who I did that to, or friendships who I did that to. And then I went through the steps a third time with a new sponsor. And this is around year 4 or 5 of my abstinence now. And my sponsor used to say, David, you're so angry all the time. Like, you might want to look at that. And I was like, what the F do you talking about? I'm in recovery. I sponsor a lot of people. And he's like, yeah, but you're talking about your dad a lot. And yeah, you have a lot of road rage and this person harmed you. And you have a lot of father issues. And I got to shine a light on that my third time through the steps. And I got to see, all right, what is my pattern with my dad? He was physically abusive. He was very sick. I know that, but what is my part in any of my relationship with my dad? My part was, over the years, about for 15 years, my dad would email me, send me letters, invite me places, really try to apologize. And I never, ever would pick up the phone. I would block his calls. I would block his emails. I would write F you back if I ever responded. I just never, ever, 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 ever gave him a chance for a second chance. And my sponsor used to say, you don't ever have to see your dad again. But you might want to look at that anger, because that's poison that you're drinking, expecting somebody else to get hurt. I was like, all right, I get it. I get my third time through the steps. Like, I accepted and understood that from a subconscious level, that like, I still have anger toward, you know, I heard in a meeting a couple of months ago, and I've stolen it ever since. You all can take it. But I heard this idea that the issue is in my tissues. And for me, growing up the way that I did, even today with almost 11 years of abstinence, you know, I'm 34 years old. So many of my issues stem from my early childhood trauma. That's just the truth for me. So many of, like, even in my marriage today, like, so many of the things that bother me, if I really get down with my notebook and do some writing, it has nothing to do with my wife. It's all rooted back in something deeper and longer and more historical. And I got to look at that with my dad. And you know, when I got to, somebody shared in the Q&A, like, is it a step 8 question? Is it step 9 question? For me, 8 and 9 are really, you have to do them. You can't do one or the other. It's like, I'm either going for it or I'm not. So step 8, step 9, step 8B, step 9A, whatever it is. I had to get willing to clean up more of my side of the street and continue to grow. And, when I got to that with my dad, my sponsor took me to the prayer in the big book, where I pray every day for somebody who harmed me. And, you know, he said, you have to do that with your dad. And I was so against it. And for weeks, I didn't want to do it. And finally, you know, wow, I open up right to it. Page 76 in the big book. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Simple as that. So I had to pray for the willingness to even forgive my dad. And I prayed for months. And then one day I found myself on my knees praying for my dad, and actually like meaning it in my heart. Not that I ever wanted to have a relationship with him. I didn't want him to be okay. I just wanted the resentments to get out of my heart. The poison that was like getting into me, I just wanted it gone. So I would pray for my dad, and then I would start to feel it, and I would start to like become overcome with emotions with my dad. And I started to have a connection with him, even though I never even saw him. I started to like feel him in a different light. And then as the magic of OA step work happens, as I was on step 9, my dad reached out to me again, and he said, you know, I would really love to see you. I'll fly you out to New York. I'll do whatever it takes. And, you know, I was in a meeting on Friday, and there's this young kid. I say young kid, he's probably my age. He was sitting next to me, and he was sharing about he wants to propose to his girlfriend, but he doesn't know how or when is the right time. And I share with him after the meeting, you're trying to figure it out. You know when you know. That's the beauty of being in recovery and having this as a life, as a spiritual way of living. I don't need to figure shit out anymore. I work the steps, I live the principles of the steps, and then I'm guided to the next intuitive action. And then when it occurs, whether it's a question or somebody reaches out of the blue, I know when it's right and I know when it's wrong. And that's how, like, living in recovery, I get out of my mind and into my intuition. So my dad had reached out to me, and he said, you know, I'd love for you to come to New York. And I just said, yes, it just felt right. 4 years in or 5 years in, all of the no's had somehow turned into, okay, I'm willing. And then, you know, I prepared for weeks with my sponsor. What do I say? I don't want to ever, you know, co-sign what he did to me. What is my part in all of this? And my sponsor said, just meet with him. That's the amends. Just meet with your dad. You don't have to go anywhere from there. Just meet with him. And I remember I met him at an Indian restaurant in New York City. And I was so scared. And I got there early and I wanted to leave. And I got into the bathroom and I said the serenity prayer. And I called somebody in program, and they're like, just show up. And I met with my dad, and he was crying, and he apologized, and I kept it with boundaries. And he said, you know, I'd love to start having a relationship with you. And I said, okay, we can take it slow. Why don't we just start like with a phone call once a month? And that's how it began. And about a year later, we had done these once a month types of phone calls, and we, you know, the boundary continued in place, but it started feeling safer. And I started to see that he was changing, and he really wanted my forgiveness. And he said, you know, I would love for you to come spend a weekend with me in New York. You know, I'd never done that since court took away custody. I was now like 25 years old. And I said, okay, it felt like the right thing to do. And, you know, it says here on page 77, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And that principle really was guiding me, that I'm not there for me anymore. I'm there to just see what God wants for me and how can I be of service. And I spent this weekend with my dad, and on the second to last day, he said to me, you know, do you want to go to one of those OA classes? I see you're like very involved in that. And he called it a class. And I was like, this guy is so stupid. But anyway, I was like, sure, like maybe that's what God wants, because that's what's showing up in my life. And we went to this meeting in Westchester, New York, and I shared. And at the end of the meeting, the secretary said, are there any newcomers here? And my dad was crying, and he raised his hand and he said, my name is Lou, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and I've been in denial my whole life. And everybody was hugging him after the meeting. I was like, yo, this is wild. And I 12-step my God through me 12-step my dad through this amends process. And it was a beautiful thing. And, you know, it's been years since that moment, and my dad and I have continued to grow a relationship, and to the point where I got married almost 3 years ago, and my wife and I were planning our wedding, and we were really planning it like by the spiritual principles of this program. So like even the guest list, I was like praying over who should come, who should be invited. Like every step God was like planning this wedding with us. It was like pretty incredible, the miracles that emerged like by doing that, by not running any aspect of the show myself. And when it became time to like figure out who was going to give the toast at the wedding, I just knew to ask my dad. And if you told me that 11 years ago, I would say you are crazy. Like there is no chance that that would ever happen. But one day at a time, one step at a time, one spiritual principle at a moment. And that's what led to like my dad gave the toast at our wedding, and it was beautiful and it was perfect. And I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. And, you know, I always share for me kind of the final frontier with amends and having a story and learning how to drop it was with my mom. And I thought my mom was fine when I came into OA, and it was a couple of years into program where I really got conscious of like, yeah, my dad was physically abusive, but my mom never protected us. And I was so like cut off to how I felt about that. And through the process of recovery, I got angry for the first time and realized how resentful I actually was. And I got to work through that. And a couple years into recovery, and this is really important to share, a couple years into recovery, I was very high on the amends process. And, you know, amends, when you make an amends, you feel incredible and you want to do more and more. And I was in New York, and I made, you know, when I was in high school, I stole like $10,000 from my mom for another addiction, which is another story. But I met with my mom at St. Patrick's Cathedral. It was like Christmas time, and we were on a pew together, and I made this beautiful amends. I think I had like 4 years of recovery, and we were crying. And a couple years later, I woke up to like other things that my mom had done in my life, or ways that she had showed up or didn't show up. And I realized like there was a whole iceberg of hate that I still had towards my mom that making that first amends kind of just hip hopped over it. And which is weird. Like I made amends and I thought like, okay, I'm never gonna have to deal with that again. And then I went years of hating my mom. And I went through a whole new process, and it started to happen as I was getting closer to when I got engaged and when I got married. I just started to see the world in a different light. And, you know, my mom's bipolar, she's schizophrenic, she hasn't had it easy, but I didn't have it easy either. And my whole story, my whole life was, if my mom just apologized once, and took accountability, then I'll be able to drop my story. And she never did. So I held on to this resentment. And when it became time for us to plan our wedding, it just became clear that my mom wasn't safe to have at our wedding. And, you know, a couple of years went by where I didn't speak to my mom or see her. And then during the pandemic, she got COVID and she ended up in the emergency room. She ended up in paralysis for three months. Getting electric shock therapy and basically went brain damaged and completely lost her mind. And, you know, she was on life support. And, you know, it was during this time where I was so raw, and I would call people who I knew had complicated relationships with their moms. I called Susan, I called people I really trusted who walked me through it. And, you know, through prayer and I guess grace, I just dropped the story about my mom ever apologizing, and forgiveness came in. And I ended up seeing my mom three times in the last couple months. And by the grace of God, I love my mom again. And I've completely forgiven her. And it feels real this time. Like there's no part of me that needs anything or wants anything or is expecting anything. It just is what it is. You know, my parents did the best they could. And like now I am an adult, and, you know, I heard once that hopefully it's a parent's job to teach a child how to live, but it's a child's job to teach a parent how to die. And I get to walk with both my parents as they're not doing well, and they're both, you know, will be dying. Hope, you know, not hopefully, they'll be dying in the next few years, and I get to show up with them and give them the dignity of having a child, and feeling like a parent. You know, I mean, it's so weird with my dad, because when you start to have a relationship with someone after not seeing them for 15 years, like, it's not that there's a catching up period. It's that, like, my dad doesn't know how to be a dad. He thinks I'm still like 12 years old or whatever. And I get to just show up for that. I don't have to have it be any different. Like, it's just is what it is today. And I have a beautiful life today. I have a beautiful marriage that is guided by spiritual principles. And it's not perfect, because I have trauma. And who doesn't have trauma? We all came out of a womb. Like, just because I have early childhood trauma, like, everybody has trauma. And it's not easy being married or being in a partnership or being in a work. Like, everything is hard. It's life. And I do the best I can. And I look at my part, I've become quicker to look at my part. And I don't have to make huge amends anymore, because I live by spiritual principles. But I do make amends pretty frequently, because I'm imperfect. And, you know, just in the last week, my sponsor remembers me when I had $7 in my bank account, which is so fun, you know, just to have people who have seen me grow spiritually and also materially and physically and, you know, emotionally, just to watch people watch me change. And my wife and I are now looking for a house, and that's a miracle. Every part of my life is a miracle today. The fact that food, like kind of how Lewis was talking about, like, it's just not a problem in my life anymore. Like, it's just been removed. But, you know, I was telling my sponsor, recovery gives me problems where I didn't have, you know, a life before. And he was saying, try to not think of them as problems. They're just more challenges or more opportunities to grow. And, you know, I've been working on this project where I've been in for the last 2 years, where I'm in charge of 60 people. Well, God's in charge, but in human form, I'm in charge. And it's been very stressful. And I've done my best to, like, every morning I meditate and I go to as many meetings as I can, but it's hard and it's stressful. And we're in, like, the final inning of this project. And on Thursday, I sent a text message to somebody who I shouldn't have. There wasn't a pause, and I called this person out for doing a shitty job, which he did. But I felt shame over it after. And that's what makes me different, I think, from many alcoholics as an overeater. Like, when I hurt people, I feel immense shame, and then I beat myself up over it, and then I overthink it. And I just want to talk about how I've processed this. This happened on Thursday. I went to an 8 o'clock meeting on Friday morning, and I shared about it. And then I called my sponsor on the way to work, and I talked through what I had done, and I got way more clarity on how to even right size what I had done. And I realized through him that I didn't even owe an amends. And for me as an overeater, I think I owe everybody an amends. Like, I want to over amends the world. And that's why I need a good sponsor who can just see me and, you know how I operate, and say, David, you're just doing what you do again. You want to apologize to the world for living. You don't have to owe an amends. In fact, you have to do this. And that was so helpful. And then Friday night, after a super long week, I came home. And I just wanted to spend time with my wife, and she made plans with a friend to, like, get a milkshake. Thank God she's not in this program. But she, like, went and got a milkshake, and I wanted to just spend time with my wife, and I expected her to be a mind reader, to know that that's what I wanted. And she went out and had a good time for like 3 hours. And I, for 3 hours, was resentful. And when she came back, I, like, huffed and puffed. And then Saturday, you know, this was Friday. Saturday morning, I went to an exercise class. I went to the delegates meeting. I called my sponsor. And then we went to lunch. And then we had a conversation about it. And we cleaned it up. And this sounds so simple, but I grew up in a family that threw shit, or like didn't have family dinners, or when somebody didn't get their way, they were abusive, or they raged, or they cheated. Like the fact that I can work spiritual principles and feel uneasy, and then go work my program, and then come back feeling better, and then clean it up. That's the amends in action. Like that is, you know, that is into action. That is how it works. And that is the beauty of this work, of this program, is that I don't have to eat over it. I don't have to yell over it. I don't have to cheat over it. All I have to do is be in discomfort and then work my program more. And then God does the rest. And, you know, I sponsor a lot of people today. And like Lewis said, it's today. Like if all of those sponsees don't call me today, I don't sponsor a lot of people today. Like I don't get by on yesterday's step work. This is a today program. This is a right now program. And if I'm not here at 8 a.m, putting my recovery first while my wife is still sleeping in the other room, I don't get to have a good day. Like number one, my recovery comes first today. So I think I'm going to open it up for questions. And then if I feel the need to talk more, I'll continue. But for now, let's open it up for some questions, because I'm sure step nine brings a lot of questions.
Thank you, David. Thank you for your share with us. Those are some pretty incredible stories that, you know, are just a true testament of your recovery. And thank you for being here with us. All right. So folks, we'll open it up for questions. If you want to raise your electronic hand, if you have any, and I'll call on you. Go ahead, Teresa.
Hi, David. My name is Teresa, compulsive overeater from Edmonton, Alberta. I wanted to know your relationship with your wife. You talked about planning your wedding with spiritual principles. Is she in a program too? Is she in a 12-step program as well? Or is that just you're coming from a place of working the spiritual principles, and so you're bringing God to the table? Or is that kind of both of you working together in a 12-step way of life?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll back it up a little. I was in a long-term relationship with somebody who was in this program, who had a sponsor, and it was not easy. It was years of me wanting them to commit to marrying. Like it was uneasy. And I was always trying to force her to have more recovery, or wondering what kind of advice her sponsor was giving. Like it was just, there was something off. And one day she came home, my ex-girlfriend, and said, you know, David, this is over. And I ended up that relationship. The next day I went to my sponsor's house and I met my wife. So that was the first real miracle, is like God dragged me out of something that was no longer working and like brought me into a miracle. What is now, I see today, is like one of the most miraculous gifts of my recovery. My wife is like from the middle of nowhere in Australia. She did not have recovery when I met her. But I'm pretty open with I've always been pretty open with my recovery and my story. And over the years, she's now in recovery. She's not in this program or in any substance program, but we work a program together, a couples program. And we've been through this 12 steps together, and you know, she's done another program on her own. But it's been a lot of me like that, and not needing to be her sponsor and just needing to be her husband and letting her be where she is in her path. But we do our life and our household. If you walk into our house, it feels like a meet. It feels like, the only way I can describe it is when you walk into a meeting and you feel the love immediately. Like that is what our household feels like. It, not a lot of anger or rage will stay in here for too long. We pray together, we'll meditate, we're always looking for new ways to grow. We'll do little meetings, we'll do daily readers. We're in recovery together, and we're always looking to grow and do new things together. And, you know, in that other couples program, they talk about the coupleship. So it's like, she has her recovery, I have my recovery. Those two recoveries need to come first. I need to put my recovery first in order to show up for the coupleship recovery. And then we have to water the plants of the coupleship, which is a whole nother thing. I used to think, if I'm doing it with my partner, then I'm getting my recovery. And it's not really like that. Like, I have to fill up myself completely first so that I can come into the couple. I hope that answers some of your question. Yeah, Moto G.
Oh, sorry, I was muted talking to myself. Go ahead, Moto. Do you want to unmute, Moto? I think she might be frozen, David. Is there any other questions in the meantime?
Perhaps the lady doesn't know. There you go. She's unmuted. Go ahead.
Oh, now you're muted again, Moto.
Yes, I have a question for David. He talked about his relationship with his father. And David, did you ever have an amends with your dad? I mean, I have kind of like the same situation with my father. And I keep trying to think, I'm on this step, and I keep trying to think of, geez, do I owe him an amends at all because of the treatment that I received as a child? So did you ever do an amends with your dad, or did you just start a relationship and build a relationship with him? Thanks.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I led a meeting at the beginning of the pandemic in LA, and I shared about what the amends with my dad, and somebody got in the chat and was like, nowhere in the AA literature does it say you have to make amends, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, this is just my story. This is for me. And I, you know, this is not a one size fits all program, but for me, I did make amends to my dad. And I understand some relationships are so toxic that you never go near it again. And that is what somebody has to do for the recovery. For me, it was the pattern that I never gave him a second chance. That was what I made amends for. And, you know, what I have learned in recovery or during the ninth step is I'm not making amends for my behavior or my actions. It's really to change my patterns. So, for example, I used to go to Whole Foods and steal coffee and kombucha like all the time in my early recovery because I was like justified and whatever. And, you know, when I got to making amends to them, you know, I made face-to-face amends to Whole Foods and this natural food store called Erewhon. I wasn't making amends for stealing $4 drinks all the time. I was making amends really because I was so scared that there wasn't going to be enough that I needed to steal. Like, I have to get down to the causes and conditions or else this is just going to keep repeating. Because everywhere I go, there I am. So I had to like first really take out the roots of like, why am I doing what I'm doing? Not just why did I do it or what did I do? It's like, why? What is the why? What am I scared of? What is the fear? So I did make amends to my dad. It was that if I ever forgive somebody, they're going to hurt me even more again. And that was something that I wanted to change. I didn't say it in those words, but I made amends for just never letting him back for 15 years. And that was it. Yeah.
Thanks, David. Maggie, you're up next.
Hi, this is Maggie, compulsive overeater. David, thank you so much for sharing on step nine. I heard what you said about being a compulsive overeater and thinking that you have to make amends to everybody about thinking you owe an amends for existence. And I used to look forward to making amends. Like I used to fantasize about it because I wanted to show everybody how far I had come. And I haven't made my amends yet. And I'm nervous that when I do, like I'll be unable to keep my own ego out of it and use that as a platform to, I don't know, show off my recovery. So I'm wondering how you let that go. Like, was it just that you were ready when you were ready? How did you make it a true, genuine amends where you were simply acknowledging the wrongs you had done?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, that's where a really good sponsor can be helpful. And sometimes I just am imperfect. Like I had an ex-girlfriend that I made amends to. And at the time that I made amends, I didn't even, this idea self can't reveal self to self. Like sometimes I don't even know I'm in my ego until years later. And I was like, oof, I was in my ego then, you know, because even I can use my recovery against me. I could say, oh, I spoke at all these meetings or sponsor all these people. So I had made an amends to somebody and I wanted her to see like, oh, I'm in recovery, healthy body weight, Hollywood, whatever. And I didn't really care about cleaning it up with her at the time. I thought I did. But I had like a year of recovery. And then years later, I made a more real amends to her. And I guess the tell for me is what is my expectation in their response? If I want them to have a certain response, that's usually a tell that there's some kind of ego or self running the amends. And if really I don't care what their response is, I just want them to have the amends, then that is more God guided for me.
Thank you. Diane A, you're up next.
Thank you so much, David, for your share. It's just been powerful. I was just wondering if you could give me some advice on making amends. Both my parents, my mother recently passed 2 years ago, and my dad 7 years ago when I was really little. Caregiver came in and I got abused and they left and it was never addressed. And both my parents were just not available. And at age 17, the family split apart and they just were not available. And I'm noticing that my ability to trust and form relationships is really damaged. And in a way, I find myself really angry still at both my parents. And I was wondering if you could just give me some insight or some advice on how to make amends to them, even though they're no longer physically here on this plane.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think this what I hear is this may go back to, if I'm stuck in a step, I have to go back to the step before. And I think, you know, although one of the principles of step eight is willingness, it's also forgiveness. And usually I'm blocked if I haven't fully forgiven. So I would maybe bring that into your prayer, your meditation, like how can I forgive more?
That's great. I definitely how to forgive more and how to be more willing to forgive. That's what I'm hearing say. And, you know, it's interesting. I see my relationships and I end up being angry because I didn't get what I needed. And it's almost like that fight from that 8-year-old is still in fighting. But do you believe that once I work on this forgiveness that it'll become lesser? Or, I mean, I'm an older person than you. And I just really appreciate what you were sharing.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say I love studies that are now being shown that this kind of stuff that we went through exists at a cellular level. So it takes time, but I my experience has been prayer has radically shifted my character from a cellular level.
Thank you. And I guess what I'm learning is below the anger is real sadness, and it's usually a frustrated need. So getting below the anger involves a lot of grief work, I guess. Does that make sense?
100%. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Catherine M., go ahead and ask your question.
This is Catherine M., and I apologize that I'm not able to go on video. David, your share was amazing, and I was really, really touched by the story with your dad. And I made my first amends with the 12 steps last winter. And my father has passed, and my issue is that I have definitely forgiven him, but I still have a lot of guilt that I was never able to make an amends to him. What I did in December when I was making amends is I wrote him a letter and, you know, tried to apologize for all the things that I did to him because of what he did to my family when I was a child. I've also heard you talk about that we have to go through, we tend to go through the steps multiple times because obviously in this situation, I have not resolved this issue. And I didn't know if you had a situation of someone that may have passed away that you weren't able to, you know, get peace in your heart, because I do not have peace in my heart from just writing the letter.
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess for me, I believe that just because somebody's not with me physically doesn't mean they're not still here. I guess that's just something that I had to come to believe with my higher power. And I mean, I feel in my recovery that I'm so in this like plane of the fourth dimension. I literally think of people and then like something, I'll get a call or a sign or something. So I guess I would just say like, open yourself up to expand your belief maybe of the idea that maybe the person is still somewhere here in you, even though they're not physically here. I have had people who died and I had shame over how I didn't clean things up fully in the third dimensional world. And I went to their, you know, cemetery, I made amends there, and that none of that stuff really, I've heard stories where like people were crying at the gravesite. For me, it's an inside job. Like I just have to believe that they get it. Like, even though they're not here, I don't necessarily have to go to their gravesite in Florida to make a physical amends. Like I just have to change my belief on really what is real in this like world, this dimensional world. And it sounds, you know, if I'm still beating myself up, then that's an amends I have to make towards myself and like letting myself off the hook.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, David. All right, guys. So we have about 10 minutes left with David. If anyone has questions or wants to comment, please go ahead. Feel free to do that now. David, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, let's Susan G has a comment or question.
Then oh, there she is. Of course she does.
Good morning.
morning, everybody. Susan, recovered compulsive overeater. I would just be amiss if I didn't, sorry, Lewis, I didn't do this at the end of yours, but I just want to say, if you're lonely in OA, there is no need. David and I have been trudging this road together for well over 10 years. Lewis for over 5. They're in my life. They know about me. I know about them, and I've watched their progress. I'm not sure how many of their podcasts are actually up on OALAIG because we're revamping it. So Lewis will probably tell me not to plug the podcast too much because they're doing something very fashionable and trendy to them. But I just want to say thank you to you both this morning. And when Lewis talked about his kidney, you know, we all walked through that with him. And that day when he got the phone call in the morning, I remember he sent me a text at work and said, might be getting a kidney. And I called him immediately. And I said, that is not a text. That is a phone call. And that's what we do. And we walked through that when we went out for dinner that night. Suddenly he got the phone call. And with David, to have watched his life evolve, I just want to say, you know, not that you have to hear me say that everything they've said today is true, but it is so wonderful to bear witness to each other's recovery. Find your tribe, find your people, trudge with them. It is a gift that you shouldn't miss. You know, as I look around the screen today and I see all of these friends, and some of you, obviously, I know in person you're in LA. Some of you I know because I've seen you for a brief minute at the birthday party. Some of you, because of Zoom, I've been on meetings with you 3-4 times a week for the last year and a half. This is an incredible gift. Get in the center. And like it says, it works, it really does. But to get to that point, you have to have done the work on those prior pages, precisely how it is written. So stick around. We have an amazing day. We have another member of the boy band after David. And I just want to say thank you for everyone who's being of service today. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. I'll jump in before I know Barb has a question. Just on that note, which is so true, when I get to my amends, you know, I hurt people, like somebody else shared. Underneath my hurt is really, I'm just sad. I lash out because I didn't get what I wanted. So, you know, if I only had a mom who protected me, if I only had a mom who taught me how to learn how to write a check, if I don't only had a blah, 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 I can get that here. I can't get a blood mother or father or brother or aunt, but I can, you know, in the tribe, everything that I always wanted and more is available for free. And I don't even have to go to their wedding, or I don't even have to show up at the family events or the functions. Like Susan is a aunt or an older sister that I never had. And, you know, my sponsor is the brother that I never had. And I've had people teach me how to get out of debt. I've had people who taught me how to write my best or my wedding, you know, vows. I've had people who taught me how to make amends to my dad. I've had father figures and mother figures. So it's all here for fun or for free. It's up to me to like get out of the need for it to look a certain way. Because my mom and my dad and my sister, they're all doing the best they can. But people here, if I'm willing, can give me everything that I was always looking for. Yes, Barb.
Well, I really don't have a question, but I have a gratitude to you, because when my mother passed, and it's been quite a few years now, I found a letter that I had written to her telling her what a wonderful mother she was. And I read it at her funeral. But I realized today that I never made an amends to her for when she was in the hospital and dying. I didn't take her hand. I didn't tell her I loved her. I didn't give her any of the support that she needed. I was busy on the telephone texting people, trying to find someone who might take care of her at night as she was in hospice, in the hospital, someone who would be there with her. And what I needed to do was to make an amends right then, and I never made it. So you opened my eyes today. I will have to write a letter to her
and then just burn it in front of the sink so I don't set the house on fire, and just let it go up to God and say, Mom, I'm sorry, you were so wonderful. And at the last, at your last moments, I wasn't present. My body was there, but my mind wasn't. So I thank you for opening up my heart today. And that's really all I had to say, but thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Annabelle.
Yeah, thank you so much, David. My name's Annabelle, I'm a compulsive overeater. And I've really been sitting on this ninth step, and I'm so glad I haven't sent it to my old boss, because I asked Lewis before, and this really touched on it. And something you said about going back to the previous step, and I was kind of writing down notes, and I think that what really helped me is going back to the previous step, all the way back to the fourth step, and what my character defect is in hesitating, or say in having this letter be so self-deprecating and just kind of almost remorseful, like, and I did this and it was really because of that, and I'm just so egotistical and blah, blah, you know, all this, like I'm trying to vomit out my you know, how terrible I am to this person. And the ulterior motive is truly so that not so much that they'd be like, oh, look how great she is now. It was really because I want them to hire me back, not the way I was hired, but to talk good of me and to be seen well in some way. And it goes back to this character defect of ego. And it's not that I can't forgive her. She really was just doing her job. I'm not resentful. It's more of a, I hurt them. And that just brings up some of these amends are not about because I hurt them. And, you know, starting in the fourth step where it was the resentment, it's more just there's people out there that I hurt that had nothing to do with our resentment list. And so it was kind of hard for me to look back, like, but I didn't do a fourth step with this person. And really, because I didn't resent them. And it turns out I did, but what you just said about underneath any hurt is unforgiveness. And I wasn't forgiving them for not understanding me and not giving me my way. And so it really is ego. And thank you so much for your story. It really brought light to that for me.
Thank you. I know Harlan's about to come up, which is going to be amazing. I would be remiss to not finish by reading the Ninth Step Promises. Which if you're around Christmas time or holiday time, our inner group in LA or San Fernando Valley always put on a promises event, which is always amazing. So if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are gonna know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And this thought brings us to step 10. Which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along.